let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick some arse.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, proudly brought to you this March by Creative Communities. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show, brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz and check us out on Spotify. Tonight we hear all about a new play, Ration the Queen's Veggies. We're catching up with an award-winning comedian later in the show about to go on tour, plus author Patricia Donovan is back with her latest book. To kick off the show, Marlon Williams dropped a new album recently and one track he shares with Lorde. So to kick off the show, here is Ka Hore He Manu E. Enjoy.
Manue, kakapa I roto rā, mehe manu koe hoki, rere atu ki wawa. Māua I e kiki, te tātaki o te rau, he taonga te ware ware, ka maumahara ke au. Marama, maringi toto mirakai, tira marama atu, e kimi ake rā. Tonu ai ka peke a ngā matata e kore ki te ana e te hoa hotoke e pohe wa tonu ai i te makaro e hai hai a te marama maringi toto miraka tira marama atu e kimi ake rā ka hore I tai a hau te tuku mihi koro pai he koingo
he karanga
kia ripeka haramai.
Beautiful start to the show. Lovely start. Short song, Emma.
Yeah, I don't know. Is that the whole track or is that like a trailer to the track?
That's the whole track. But he's released a whole album, so go check it out. Some beautiful videos of Marlon Williams up on YouTube.
Fabulous. And
Lorde featuring in that one. Gee, this week went fast.
I know, it's crazy.
It feels like, you know, we blinked and we were here last week. We both caught one show this week, we caught together, and you've seen a few other things, but we checked in with our friends from The Dolphin with Murdered to Death.
We did, yeah, and it was a great murder whodunit. It definitely left me wondering till the end which one it was going
to
be.
And well done to our young guest who was here last week, because that was his first stage show, and you wouldn't have picked that out.
No, definitely not.
Huge well done. And what else did you catch up with this week?
So today I also popped up to Orewa to see Le Cage aux Folles, which, of course, is quite an old show.
Do you know what? I've never seen it in all these years. I've never seen it.
Yeah, it was done at Auckland Music Theatre probably about 10 years ago now.
Right.
So it was lovely to see it back on stage and some familiar faces in there. So, yeah, it was nice to trek up. It was a beautiful day, so it was a bit of a pity to be inside. But I did start the morning by having a walk around Western Springs for Pacifica.
Oh, nice. And that was a big popular event.
Oh, my goodness. I couldn't believe how many people were there.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic. All right, shall we kick off our show with our first fabulous guest?
Oh, yes, why not?
And I just love the title of the show. If that's going to hook anybody in, I think the title's going to kick us off. Ration the Queen's Veggies. Nahiriwa, welcome to the show.
Tēnā rau atu, tūtahi e mihi ana ki a koutou ngā kai whakarongo. Koutou ngā kai whakarongo o tēnei o te mea reo irirangi. Nō rere e mihi ana ki a koutou o tira ki a kuruatahi. Nā kuruatahi e whakai ana ki tēnei momo uiui. Ka hara mai tēnei hei whakanuia hei... Whakamāramatia, he poto whakamāramatia mo tēnei momo, momo whakāturanga no reira e mihi ana ki a, kaua, ki a korua tahi, tēnā rā korua. Thank you very much for having me. He paku mihi noi o ki tēnei ki a koutou katoa, tēnā.
We are delighted to have you, kia ora. So, look, let's unpack this slowly. We've got a good, good half an hour with you. So let's first of all talk about the show first, then we'll unpack sort of your journey in it and then your journey in the arts. But Ration the Queen's Veggies instantly has you guessing and wondering what the story might be about. So tell us a little bit about the background of this.
Yeah, cool. The story, the name comes from a message that a group called Te Waka Haurua wanted to leave when they redacted the Treaty of Waitangi, the Article the Third. That was the message they wanted to leave, was ration the Queen's Veggies. This story is based on what happened after that.
Okay.
So when Te Waka Haurua, and specifically around a man named Te Wehi Ratana. He's from Rotorua, and he was a part of the group that went down. They had huge huis and to try and figure out what, you know, what to do about this, because they've tried many years to try and get the Treaty of Waitangi, the English version, changed, because it's a misrepresentation of what Te Tiriti is, or the Maori version of it. So after they decided and what they were going to do, what message they wanted to leave, the cops were involved, and then the bulk of the story takes place after that. So it's what happened when he went to prison, his cellmate, and the plan that they came up with to be able to try and give a voice to those who are in prison, those who already feel like, you know, they don't have a voice because they're incarcerated, all that sort of stuff. So that's where the bulk of the journey takes place.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
What year are we talking for most of the story?
So that was just after 2000. So 2023 is when they redacted the article. So just a little bit after that. He wasn't in there for too long. So it took place over the next sort of months until towards the following year. Yeah.
So it's the Queen's Veggies, but very close to being the King's Veggies.
Yeah, very close. Yeah.
Very, very. Now, we should tell our audience, this is a one-person show. It's all you. So going back to how this has been sort of scripted and written, was it a devised process, or has someone sat down and created the script? Like, how is all of this information and, I guess, the stories from him portrayed into this performance?
Cool. The story came to the leaders of Te Pou, Amber Crean and Tainu Tukiwaho, through Amber's best friend Maya, who is Te Wehi's sister. So she tells them about what happened after all that, and a lot of the hook was that the inmates were told to write letters regarding their feelings of what Te Wehi did and Te Waka Haurua did to the treaty, and how, what they thought about that as a matter of protest. And so all these letters came to them, came to him, to Te Wehi and his cellmate. And so that story came to us, and then came to Tainui and Amber. They decided, yep, we'll put on a, we'll collate all these letters. Well, they got them, and then having a talk to Te Wehi as well. So he came in, and he's been devising with them through the process. So Tainui has been the main writer in this. He's brought in Te Wehi to write some parts, and then we also managed to get on the phone with his cellmate at the time, Brian. And so we asked him, "Hey, Tainui did, asked him if would you be able to write some of the stuff down that you think, what do you think that people need to know?" So, which has been great for me too, because then I started talking to him as well to be able to try and get a feel for what, how he, things were for him during that whole process, and even further back before that, and so how his train of thought was, the type of person he is, all that sort of stuff. Yeah, so that's how all of the information came together, and then it was just a matter of putting it all together, creating a narrative to go through it, and then figure out, okay, what is the story that we want to tell? So it was a long process. It was really, really good. But over months of Kōrero, actually, it would be almost just under a year, I guess, of actual talking about it and trying to figure it all out.
Wow. So does that mean it's got a bit of a verbatim kind of feel? Because
yes.
It is their exact words?
So we have, so Brian's words, we took them verbatim, and we... And it had to be that way because his voice is very unique and his train of thought is really unique. So we couldn't just take that and start summarizing it. It would just sound like us. So him having his voice in there was a big factor in it. And it's one that while we've got people to come in, you know, whānau to just come in just to see that, make sure that we're on the right track. That's things that they've caught on to, is like, well, that those monologues are incredible. There's so much going on in there, you know. Yeah, so yeah, there is a bit of a verbatim going on there.
And it means that you're playing multiple characters.
Yeah,
like, you playing all of these
yep.
people?
Yeah. So yeah, I play Te Wehi, I play Brian, and then I play a few other inmates as well, just sort of voicing their opinions and thoughts and stuff. And that is all me, and I'm playing, jumping in between all of those characters and stuff. Yeah. So
tell us about your process then to try and keep. I mean, being on the stage by yourself for a length of time, what do you do to keep yourself kind of focused? Probably isn't the right word, but how do you keep yourself in there when it's just you on stage?
Or is it easier, perhaps?
To be honest, I hadn't done any sort of solo work since drama school, so this has been a first, and it's been sort of 17-ish years I've been on the stage. It has been a lot of work just to try and make sure that we're keeping things going, trying to make sure that the narrative flows. That's another way to keep in it. Really solidifying characters as well has been a really big thing. But for me, my process has been listen to the director, do the thing, and that's how it's been keeping me in there, you know. Yeah,
Which is interesting because the way you've been talking, it sounded quite collaborative. That you're sort of, you're very much part of the process, but it's sounding like then you've also got the line in the sand of when you go, all right, now I'm on stage. Take it away, Tainui, direct me.
Yeah. It has been like just. In terms of the collaboration process, it's been, okay, what things can we put in there and what have you got to offer? That's how Tainui has been working with me. And so I'll throw a whole bunch of offers out there, and then he's been the one's gone, okay, we'll take that offer, and then stitch it together to make it work. Yeah.
When it comes to the story itself, what has been, I guess, the biggest, I don't know if learning's the right word, but sort of surprise or something along the way that you went, wow, I hadn't thought of that, or I hadn't thought of it through that perspective. You know, you mentioned Brian's was pretty specific. You had to sort of read them verbatim. Were there moments that you went, wow, hadn't thought of it that way?
Yeah, there has been. Specifically with Brian's stuff, because his background has been full of stuff. He has told me a whole bunch of his life growing up, and that's also, you can see where his angle is due to that. So it's been about trying to figure out, so whilst, you know, we're all sitting here thinking that the life that we know outside of prison is like this, they've been thinking about that, but even further, because they've got time to think about that, and their experiences has led them to understand the world differently. And then being institutionalized in that sense too has also sort of chipped away at a lot of the bravado that people put on.
Right.
Yeah. So a lot of it's really raw, just complete raw understandings of people rather than situations, if you know what I mean. So he really has thought about what impact everything has due to how he's managed to be, or how he's found himself in prison, because he's learned how to look back and, okay, these chain of events have all led to this sort of stuff. He's been quite good at figuring out, okay, this part will probably, this is how this started derailing.
Yeah.
And this part here in Aotearoa, this is how this part is derailing. Which is how, when Te Wehi turned up in prison, And he was mulling over, okay, what are we going to do about this? Because I now know what you've done, and I think what you've done is amazing. I think what you've done, how you've protested has been incredible. What can we do to keep that conversation going? Because it could be quite easy to just go, okay, you did that thing, and then let it go. One of the things was, as when he went into prison, is that he was going to go on a hunger strike and be like, nah, I'm not going to touch anything because all of this stuff is all institutionalized kai, and I'm not going to do that. Nah, I will not take part in that, regardless. It was Brian that said, oh, hey, how about we do this, you know? And essentially just changed the waidua and the modi of that whole prison block. So that was a big thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I don't think I could have thought of that perspective just going in there, like, knowing how I grew up. Mm. So, yeah, those sort of things are quite incredible. Those are things that we've been unlocking as we've been going along, you know, and having conversations with him and that sort of stuff. Yeah.
So, full on. Is the objective of this piece about the treaty, or is it more about being in prison, or is it a bit of both?
That is a good question, and it's not one that I could have answered 3 days ago. Everything started to land a couple of days ago, and we only knew that because I had another interview who asked a very similar question. But it is about both, and we do tend to sit around the duality of truth and untruth, what exists and what doesn't exist. We play with that sort of space. Yes, there is treaty elements in it, but the treaty is the vehicle into the story and into Te Wiki's life, into Brian's narrative, into the system itself, all that sort of stuff. Yeah, so that's really what it is, yeah.
Okay.
There's a lovely piece in the media release that talks about having to pay with gum as the sort of the valuable currency to get some of these letters from Brian. Talk us through that.
Yeah, well, it's exactly that. So when prisons were made smoke-free, it meant that anybody who was being sent to prison, if you did say that you smoked, then you were given nicotine gum. They call them lozzies inside. There's inside scoop. Which as you just said, is a form of currency inside. So when he went in, he asked what do I do? And everybody that he talked to, his lawyers, all of them, said, when you go in, say you smoke. And he wasn't sure why, and then he found out when he was given all these nicotine lozenges, he doesn't smoke. And then, yeah, he was told, yeah, that's money in here. And so that was how they were able to get the letters, was because Brian went, okay, number one, smoking is stink. We shouldn't be doing it. Number two, we're all addicted to this stuff. We shouldn't be doing it. But the positive that we can spin on this is if we say to you guys, write a letter, just one, about your thoughts on what, on Te Wiki and what they did to the treaty. Write your thoughts about that, and we'll give you five pieces of gum.
Wow.
And so that became the exchange. And so that's where the positive came out of that, as his idea was to flip the script on this. We're no longer just going to be using these as currency. We're going to be using these as a way to fight the system as well. Mm. The interesting thing is that people were, they started off with their thoughts about their mahi against the treaty at Te Papa. And then as it went on, people started sharing their own feelings and thoughts about being incarcerated, the hopes that they have for their whānaus outside, the hopes that they have for themselves when they get out. That was the real gold that started coming out of it. Yeah.
Mm. Beautiful. You've hooked us. Well done. From a audience perspective, if you like, what can we expect, like the timeline of this journey on stage? How many days, weeks, months, years do we see unfold in front of us?
It tracks the few days that he was in prison. He was only in there for 48 hours.
Yeah.
But even that was enough to change things. Mm. So, yeah, there's a huge testament to that. So it really follows across those 2 days, really. Sure. A couple of days on either side of those, if you want. But, yeah.
What's been the biggest challenge for you so far?
Ooh. A really big one has been, the verbatim was a big one, you know, because I can't paraphrase this man's words.
Yeah.
Verbatim was really, really hard. Getting there, having all these different characters, very typical answers, all these different characters, making sure that they are distinctive from each other, that they are full characters regardless of how long they're on for, you know, they've got opinions and all that sort of stuff, and making sure that we've got those going, tightening that up a lot. A lot of it too was that it would be very easy to take a story like this and just have it be super heavy.
Mm.
And whilst we are very much, yep, cool, there is absolute heaviness in there, we tried our hardest to make sure that we're not sitting in that funk for too long, you know. And then we actually went the opposite way, and we made it super light, and then we're like, okay, cool, now we can drop those
find the middle ground. Yeah.
So that's been a really good challenge, really, really good challenge. And like I said, I haven't done a solo piece for a long time, so having to wake up old bones, a big challenge.
Well, let's take a short music break, and after the break, let's unpack those 17 years you were talking about. Danica Bryant is back with a latest track. This is Morals. Enjoy.
Tell me if I've said too much, been selfish with my words, trying hard to be enough. The bones they ache, the path I take, my passion is my promise made, and I know the right way works. Can my mind stop making a madman out of me? Can my mind stop making it so hard to feel free? I say that I want
Danica Bryant, Morals. Check out the music video on YouTube. It's very different to the song that I was expecting. It's all set in Lyle Bay with her as a fairy stuck in the water and on the rocks.
Okay.
Go and check it out. All right, back to our fabulous guest. Take us back. When did your arts journey first kick off? You mentioned 17 years since being in university or study. What first set it off before that, though?
This is going back a few years. I fell into this accidentally, to be honest. I was walking around with my friends back in Rotorua, and this guy sort of just pulled over, and I'm short comparatively with my friends, and I suppose back in Tarawa land too. And the guy says, "Oh, like I'm directing the show, but I'm looking for someone short. Do you want to be in this? Have you done any acting before?" And I was like, "Oh, nah, but I'm doing nothing. Yeah, sure, why not?" And so he put me in the show, and it was Midsummer Night's Dream. I was Puck. And so that was my first kick of it. From that, there was another
first
director.
First kick into Shakespeare. It's a real kick.
Out of it. And then, another director, her name was Pam Moore. She hit me up after one of the shows and said, "Hi, look, I'm putting together a troupe. We're going to do a tour up up in North Island. If you want to come along and have a look, see what you feel about it, how you feel about it, and then maybe you want to join us." So I did that for about 2 or 3 years. But she kept telling me about going to drama school, and that it would be worth checking it out if I chose to do this professionally. Even though, if that was my first professional tour. And then I was like, yeah, cool. Went down to Wellington, went to drama school. And then from there, I was just doing back-to-back tours. So I toured for 10 years.
Wow.
We'd done and worked with Theta and did Sex Wise. I did the Duffy Books and Homes tour. I did a whole bunch of tours between sort of here and Aotearoa and overseas. And then I wanted to get in touch with or just ground myself with a lot more Māori work. So I came back to Aotearoa and moved to Auckland, to here, and then started doing stuff with Te Pou. And from there, I went down to Wellington, went with Takirua Productions, worked for a few years, and then came back up here. And then ever since, I've been sort of on and off the stage with Te Pou Theatre and all them. Yeah, so it's been full on. It's been a lot of touring, a lot of backpacks, a lot of suitcase living.
Yeah, and you leave a family in Rotorua.
Yep, I
do. So you're doing that juggle as well.
Yeah, that's a new challenge. If I go back to the question that you asked earlier, what is the biggest challenge? It has been that.
Yeah,
leaving my whānau back in Rotorua. And I mean, I have a son and he's 2, and so he's discovering the world. And every now and again, I'll be able to call him, but it does feel like I'm missing that. So it is hard, but.
Mm.
And hard too if you are rehearsing in the weekend too, because it's not like you can get into your car on Friday night and go home for the weekend and be back for Monday morning.
And what's next on the horizon? If we crystal ball, what have you got coming up?
Cool. Well, so once this season here finishes, we are doing another season of Ration the Queen's Veggies down in Wellington.
Oh, brilliant.
At Circa Theatre. We're currently going to go for funding so that I can tour that to more places. We do want to get it back to Rotorua, I mean, considering that 3 of the creatives are from there. So, we want to try to get it there, and also to Hamilton as well, and just try and push this as much as we can. I've been doing a heck load of writing. So it's been great, and I want to try and finish a lot of my te reo Māori scripts that I've been slowly chipping away at. That's on the immediate. Been trying to collate together a whole bunch of maybe solo or 2 people acts that I can just tour around, or my friends can tour around if I'm busy, but we can get these stories that we've come up with, and we can take them around. That's the mid goal.
So the plays that you're writing are full te reo?
Say most of them. I've written a couple of Pākehā plays as well, English plays as well, but Yeah, I do want to focus more on Te Reo Māori plays, yeah.
So when you're writing a play in Te Reo, mm-hmm. what are some of the things maybe that you, like if we've, because we get a lot of young listeners who are student performers and writers and things. So yeah, right. what are some of the things you maybe need to consider if you're writing in a different language?
I think one of the biggest things is understanding that there is a responsibility that you take if you're writing your show. It doesn't have to be in Te Reo, but if you're writing a show that is based on a tupuna, it would likely be in Te Reo Māori, and therefore you have a responsibility to understand that other people will also be affected by this, and whether you're okay with that, mm-hmm. you know, whether or not you're basing this in, like, entirely in a historical sense, then you've got a lot of research to do. Mm. Or if you're going to sort of play around with the rules a little bit, that's another one too. So yeah, there's those sort of angles, understanding what angle you're trying to take with your story, what is that, and then also knowing that the great thing is that you're opening those doors for the next ones to come through. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's never really about us. You know, we do these things for the next ones to go, oh, cool, I can do this thing too. And for them to, you know, sort of carry on that cycle, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
With this piece of work, what would you say Tainui's done to sort of, I guess, protect the story or keep the story safe and honour it? What sort of steps does he take along the way?
This one has been... Yeah, a super interesting one. Super interesting one. The biggest thing is that we are, like I said before, because we're balancing, we're playing in that realm of uncertainty about what is true and what is untrue. When we did the show for our friends in whānau just over the last few days, they were clear. They could clearly see, okay, that is true. Yep, that's a truth. And then that is a vast lie. And so, mm-hmm. and the way that we're doing is that we're pushing it to the extreme. Like we drive it as far away from any sort of truth so that that absurdity is noted. And mm-hmm. so they're like, okay, cool. So, yep, these things are true. And then the conversations that could exist, those sound like real conversations. That's cool. That's great. They may be presented in a way that's there where the lie, where it might be surrounded by lie, but there's a truth that sits inside of it. The main integrity of the story comes from all the facts that we got. You know, these timeline events, those things happened. Mm. So that's how we're keeping the integrity of that stuff safe too, yeah.
And once you've finished the devising, pulling it all together and placing, is this going to become a script, permanent script that you can roll out to other people maybe?
Oh, that is a good question. I'm not too sure I can answer that question, to be honest. But it is a script. We've fully scripted it out now. It all sits there. And we're sort of trimming away all the fat now. In terms of a script that is open to other people, I can't really answer that one.
But no, no way.
It could be a really good text to use, yeah.
Yeah, I think from a New Zealand history point of view as well, right. You know, especially for... students doing NCA and needing to do New Zealand plays and New Zealand history and getting that kind of background, that true feeling of this is actually this is something that happened in New Zealand. This isn't a made up story.
Yeah.
You know, this is a real life thing that happened in history and an important thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that when you do it in Wellington, you're at Circa right next to Te Papa.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
That's very cool. All right, we're going to finish with a couple of quick fire kick arts questions now. Are you ready? Brace yourself.
Sure.
All right. When you look back in your career so far, what's been, and you can't talk about this production, so we'll keep that safe, what's been one of your absolute career highlights?
Oh, my first complete reo Māori show was a huge highlight for me. I mean, I grew up with my reo back in the day, but then without having someone to speak with, I did lose a lot of that. So bringing that back up was a huge one for me, and that actually unlocked a lot of stuff where I went, okay, now I need to go back on my reo journey. Mm. I do need to go and pick this back up. I do need to go and learn some more again, and I do need to make sure that I know what I'm doing. And then when I start writing these scripts, they will make sense. So, yeah, that's been a big one, yeah.
That's cool. If your lovely son grows up and says, Dad, I want to get involved in the arts and make it a career, what would be the first piece of advice you'd give him?
There's a whakatauki that's in Te Reo Māori, and it would be kei o ringa ringa te ao. It just means that the world is in your hands. And we are, that's also too, because we as actors are storytellers, we create worlds. And you know, and so to just, if he gets lost there, it's there. That would be beautiful. What I would say, yeah.
Beautiful.
And if Creative New Zealand were to walk through the door with a open check, what would your dream thing, what do you think you would do with it? What's the first thing that comes to mind that you would go, this is what I want to do?
Not including for future of this show?
It could be the future of this show. Why not?
I mean, if they're going to give me a check that I can just spend on whatever, I'm going to go home and I will make a performing arts centre at home, or maybe even over in Taupo. And then build a theatre there where I can house stories that don't have to be too high-end like the Howard Morrison has them. You know, it can be affordable and it can be just really creative space that can make new stuff. That's what I would love to do. A theatre for my son, really.
Fabulous. Yes, I always think if a theatre person was to win a big amount of lotto, especially with community theatres and that, I reckon a lot would be given back to theatre, actually to theatre.
Yeah.
You know, not just your own house and things like that.
Yeah.
I would love to have a whare to share with people and not be paying the council money that I pay every week to teach my lessons.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. All right, business end, where can people go and get tickets and find out more about Ration the Queen's Veggies?
Cool. So the show is a part of the Auckland Arts Festival, so you can go check them out on the line, or go
AAF.co.nz.
Yeah, that's the one. Or you can go onto the Te Pou website. On there too, you've got links to the show as well there.
And of course, jump onto KickArts info at, no, that's our email.
Just
KickArts. KickArts.org.nz, and it's on our events page there as well.
Running from the 14th to the 23rd of March. Thank you so much at the end of a very long rehearsal day to come and spend so long with us. We really appreciate it. It sounds amazing. We'll look forward to seeing it, and all the best for your season here, and I hope it does tour.
Thank you. Tēnā rau atu kia kōrua. Kōrua tahi e noho mai ki tāku nei taha. Hei kōrero re roi apāna ki tēnei moromahi tēnā rā kōrua.
Kia ora. Thank you so much. We're going to take a music break as we swap out our guests. Now, Six the Musical has been making lots of noise in the Civic Theatre in Auckland at the moment. Here is the title track.
Divorced. Died. Divorced. Beheaded. Survived. And tonight, we are...
Think you've heard before.
We know you know our names and our fame and our faces.
Know all about the glories and the disgraces.
I'm done, cause all this time I just want a word in a stupid rhyme.
So I picked up a pen and a microphone.
History's about to get overthrown.
Divorced, beheaded, died.
Divorced, beheaded, survived.
For you tonight, we're divorced, beheaded, live. The show to the history mix. Switching up the flow as we add the prefix. Everybody knows that we used to be six wives. Freezing up the roof till we hit the ceiling. Get ready for the truth that we'll be revealing. Everybody
about. So it's our ex and the way it ends.
But a pair doesn't beat a royal flush. You're gonna find out how we got unfriended.
Tonight we're gonna do ourselves justice. Cause we're taking you to court.
Every true rose has its thorns. And you're gonna hear him live. In consort,
divorced,
beheaded,
died,
divorced,
beheaded,
survived,
but just for you tonight, we're divorced, beheaded,
My name's Catherine of Aragon. Was married 24 years. I'm a paragon of royalty. My loyalty is to the Vatican. So if you try to dump me, you won't try that again.
I'm that Berlin girl and I'm up next. See, I broke England from the church. Yeah, I'm that sexy. Why did I lose my head? Well, my sleeves may be green, but my lipstick's red.
Jane Seymour, the only one he truly loved.
Rude.
When my son was newly born, I died. But I'm not what I seem, or am I? Stick around and you'll suddenly see more.
Divorced.
Ich bin Anna of Cleves.
Yeah.
When he saw my portrait, he was like,
yeah.
But I didn't look as good as I did in my pic. Funny how we all discussed that, but never Henry's little
prick. Pack up your ears, I'm the Catherine who lost her head.
Beheaded.
For my promiscuity outside of wed. Lock up your husbands, lock up your sons. Kay Howard is here and the fun's begun.
Survive.
Five down, I'm the final wife. I saw him to the end of his life. Survivor Catherine Parr. I bet you wanna know how I got this far.
I said I bet you wanna know how we got this far.
Hey, you wanna know how we got this far. This party buzzing. You want a queen bee? Well, there's half a dozen. Everybody knows that we used to be six.
Six on at the Civic, and if you want some cheap tickets, this Tuesday they have a show. Tuesday night, tickets are only $80, I spotted today. That's
Ooh.
The Cheap Tuesday.
Ooh.
Go and check it out. Hearing great reviews from people that have been, and you and I haven't made it there yet.
Haven't made it to this one. Have seen it in New York. Not kind
it's
of
good.
To drop
yes,
anything,
off,
I show
yeah.
off again. But I love it, and I'm actually doing the teen version. I think I've said this to the listeners before, but I'm doing the teen version of it. In Queenstown at Wakatipu High School later this year, we've cast it.
That's cool.
And I'll tell you what, those girls are like so excited.
Love it. Love it. All right.
So we've got something new in the studio, Stephen.
We do. Billy T Award nominee. Itai is here. Good evening. Welcome to Kick Arts.
Good evening. What's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. And you've got a busy little schedule ahead with
well,
your...
Well, he's only got a half-baked schedule.
Well,
here.
Yes. I was going to say, with your half-baked ideas show.
Yeah.
So, look, let's unpack who you are first. We'll do reverse. Usually with Kick Arts, we talk about the person last in the show first. But I think... We need to know who you are before we talk about your half-baked ideas.
Sarah Show. No.
Who are you? Tell us, when did the arts world kick in for you?
Oh, man. 2012. 2012, trying to impress a woman.
Ooh, okay.
She was unimpressed.
It didn't work?
It did not work out.
Were you trying to be funny?
Well, on stage one time, yeah. Trying to stand up to impress a girl.
Yeah.
She was like, no.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And life so lesson there for
was
people.
That your first time on stage?
That was my first time on stage, yeah.
So you hadn't done any like public speaking or comedy or anything like that in high school?
I don't think so. And if I have, I must have blocked it out because I don't remember that, yeah.
So what possessed you to get on stage to try and impress someone? Was it a dare? Like, did someone
or
offer
a
you a beer or what was that?
I'll do anything for a beer. That's why I'm here. But no, it was just a girl. She was just like, hey, you should do stand-up comedy. I think it would be good. And yeah, I did it. I thought this would be a way to her heart.
And it didn't work.
Yeah. We're having a real issue with the
with the green microphone.
Just destroying the place.
The green microphone's just fallen over, but it's staying okay. Where it is.
This is why this show needs a video. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, people are missing out. That would have been entertaining.
Yeah.
So, okay, fast forward. You had that moment.
Yes.
But it didn't put you off stand-up comedy.
It only put me off women.
Okay, yeah. Bye-bye. That didn't work.
But now I'm married to the act.
Love it. So where did you head next in this journey?
Yeah, I think I just kept doing it despite objections of family and audiences. But I just, you know, stuck with it and took a little break, I think, when I was like around 21. And then a couple of years just chilling. And maybe when I was around 25, I just organically started listening and watching stand-up comedy. Like, I just really started consuming it, just like as a fan, you know?
Mm.
And then one day, I think I was just like, man, I used to do that, not to that level, but I was like, this will be fun to give it a go again now that I'm a bit more, I guess, aware, have a bit more context of what the art form is. Because before, I thought it was just like,
tell bad jokes.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's the review of all my audiences. Yeah, thank you. Well, you know what it is? Like, first time I did stand-up comedy, and I get crucified for this, but the very first time I did stand-up comedy, I was just reciting other people's material because I didn't realize stand-up comedy was, like, written by the people performing it. I thought it was more like street jokes, kind of like a karaoke for comedy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
And I'm always like, if you go to a potluck dinner, you don't invent a dish. You know what I mean? You just bring something that everyone knows.
Yes, that's like a band who plays covers.
Yeah.
It's their own.
That's what I thought it was.
Yeah, okay.
Turns out it's not.
Right.
And it's frowned upon.
Oh.
Do you have a, like, if we were to open your Spotify playlist of stand-up comedians, who's kind of the people that you listen to or who do you inspire? Who inspires you?
Well, first of all, I'm over an Apple Music kind of guy these days, but not to brag, you know, it comes with a phone. The comedians I listen to the most these days, I think it would be pretty, not, I wouldn't say underground, but they're not the mainstream comic that everyone knows. But if I had to drop some names that everyone knows, probably like someone like John Mulaney, Daniel Tosh, maybe. Yeah, people like that.
Is there something that you inspire to do in your future? Like, do you want to be on the Taskmaster? Is that something you inspire to be on?
If Taskmaster is listening, I would love to be on Taskmaster. I would love to be on any show that will have me, yes. I'm also trying to get on, like, just any show, you know what I mean? Like reality TV, Kiwi Bake Off.
Come on, Jeremy, pop him on 7 days for us. Help him out.
Yeah, chuck me on.
Or
yeah.
Bake Off. So what would you, what's your specialty if you're going on Bake Off?
Okay, I've never watched the show, to be honest.
it does involve some baking.
Okay. I thought it was a different kind of bacon. It's I just seen a lot of ads for it, and I think I will have good banter with the judges. I will not be a good cook. I'm not a good cook.
But that's almost more entertaining.
That's what I'm thinking,
yeah.
I don't know if that's what their core audience's values. Like, I wouldn't, if I was like a fan of bacon, you know, if I was really into cookies, I was trying to think of like a better dessert, but I'm not that guy, you know what I mean? But if I was into, and then some guy came on the show and was not respecting it and didn't even know what the show was, you know, probably.
So can you follow a recipe though?
Yeah, I can follow a recipe. But you know what I don't like about recipes? And I think this is my pitch to not be on the show. But, like, you know, you go on a recipe, and then they always have some sort of an ingredient that you're like, I don't have it. Mm. So they'll say, like, you should have, like, this very specific kind of salt. But if you don't have it, regular salt will be fine. But I need, like, another step. Like, what if I don't have that regular salt? Like, something like, have kosher salt. And if you don't have that, just have, like, regular salt. And if you don't have that, just get Uber Eats.
Yeah, you know
what I mean? Like, I need that kind of a recipe for me.
Love Uber. Gotta love some Uber Eats.
I don't know how, if we're helping his dating profile, though.
No.
The baking. Your accent, where are you? Where's home?
I'm from the Middle East originally. But I grew up here in the Kapiti Coast.
Ah.
God's waiting room, as they call it.
Okay. When did you move here?
When I was 16.
Brilliant. So how come you've still got the accent?
Dude, that's what every year I get that call from immigration. They're like, how come you still have the accent? I'm like, I don't know. I'm trying to get rid of it. Yeah. But you know, it's funny. Like, my sister doesn't really have that strong of an accent. So I think it's like a specific... She moved here when she was 12. And I think it's like just on the cusp of you keep the accent, you lose the accent. But I try and sound more Kiwi, like in the mornings, like I wake up, I say yeah nah like 50 times in the mirror, but I still haven't been able to lose my accent.
Yeah nah doesn't work.
It does not work. Yeah.
Well, you need to be living in West Auckland, perhaps.
Oh,
you
yes.
know, probably because Paula Bennett set that one off. So it's got to be out west for them, yeah. not Wellington.
I have some friends who live there. And I don't visit them out of fear for my life. But
you're pretty close to it here at the studio. Just
that is true, actually, yeah.
Now, you have featured on television with Guymont Spelling Bee.
Shout out Guy Montgomery.
And The Bachelorette New Zealand.
I'm not giving her a shout out. I'm still mad.
So did she not choose you?
Uh-huh.
She didn't give you a rose?
Man, she did not.
Did she give you one rose?
No, I'm one of the, I mean, this is still
you're
fresh.
You're fished off.
Yeah, well, I like to refer to myself as an original reject, but yeah, I did not make it past the premiere.
And does Bachelorette appear in your stand-up set?
Well, she appears in my nightmares, but in my actual set, no. Well, it's to be confirmed. I don't attack her, if that's what you're asking, because she's listening, wherever she is. Yeah, but it was a fun experience for sure. Yeah, that was a wild experience. It's kind of like this, you know. It's like you're being watched and recorded, but like for the whole day, and surrounded by dudes.
So, does your set have a specific theme to it, or does it change regularly?
This is half baked ideas you're talking about.
Yeah, just in general. Does your stand up have kind of like a theme?
Well, it's trying to be funny. Mainly funny, you know what I mean? But that's a hard task these days. I do a lot of crowd work. I do a lot of crowd work and a lot of improvisation, or like riffing on the spot. So that's kind of what I really like to do. But I guess for the show, it's a bit more, because it's building up for the Billy T. I don't know if you guys know what the Billy T is. You guys, everybody's giving me a blank.
So. Oh, no, I love Billy T. I grew up with Billy T.
Oh,
we watched Billy T weekly.
Yes.
Billy T was actually my brother's neighbor for over 10 years.
Are you serious?
He got shot at my neighbor's brother's house in his driveway.
Billy T did?
Yeah.
Is that how he's demise?
No, that's not how he died.
Oh, okay.
But he did get shot.
Yeah.
No way. Remind me to never visit your brother's driveway.
So, because you're a Billy T nominee, don't all Billy T's have to wear the wife beater singlet when they're performing to be like Billy T and have a towel over their shoulder?
Well, that's the thing, though. I don't look good in white, but the towel, so that's the prize money. So people ask, why are you doing it? I'm always like, I'm doing it. A lot of people do it for the accolades or like...
You're doing it to get a towel?
I'm doing it for the money.
Oh, you're not doing it for the yellow towel over your shoulder?
I have a yellow towel. It used to be white, but now it's yellow. You know what I mean? So the prize money is $5,000.
Brilliant.
And you win a yellow towel. So technically you win $5,005. You know, it's not bad.
And is that judged at a specific competition where you get so many minutes on stage? Or do the judges also come and check out your own work?
Well, my conspiracy theory, it's all predetermined. You know what I mean? But I don't want to talk ill of the judges.
Well, tonight's your lucky night. Play the
They're right here. So the way it works is we're all gonna wanna. So the way it works really is there's a pitch. You pitch to the judges and then you do a showcase. And this happened back in October maybe or September. And out of 20 odd comedians, five funny ones were chosen. I was one of them. Actually, there's a duo, so there's six overall this year. And in May, in the comedy festival, we each do an hour. And that's a separate hour.
An hour.
I know.
That's real long time to stand up, isn't it?
Yeah, and we've been talking 5 minutes. You're already sick of me. So imagine what happens in an hour. But yeah, it has to be, I think, 50 minutes. I think that's the criteria for the award. And we all do an hour, different venues. We all do it in the same week, which is the final week of the comedy festival. And then the judges come to different nights. They don't even all come to the same night of the show in case you have a week night or people don't show up, you know what I mean? And yeah, and then there's the Last Laughs. That's the closing night of the comedy festival. That's in the Sky City. And I think that's part of the competition, and that's where each one of us just does like a 5 minute set. And they kind of combine the two. And then, yeah, you get a yellow towel on stage. I mean, the dream. It's really the dream.
The dream. Have you watched any Billy T sketches?
I have watched some stuff. Yeah, I watched everything of his I could on the YouTube. And actually, if you go to the comedy club, in the green room, there's a big photo of Billy T, like a sketch of a Billy T. It's really nice. So I've actually always been... Before I even knew who he was, I was just, as a kid going to the comedy club, I always saw his picture there. Yeah.
Brilliant. Now, you mentioned before you did crowd work, you had a word for it, where you're out sort of crowd work and
maybe like riffing or something?
Yeah, and your observational comedy.
Yeah.
How dangerous is this for the audience? Like, is this, I'm observing the audience and I'm going to pick on that poor, awkward person in the front row?
No.
Or how does this work?
I'm going to pick on the strong dude in the front row.
Okay, good.
Go for the jugular. No, it's not like that. I think a lot of stuff online you see of crowd work is people making fun of other people, but it's not really like that. It's more like just like a chat, and I interject with whatever funny and witty things I can come up on the spot. Can't think of anything now, which is not a good.
So if we go, Emma, we're not sitting in the front row.
No way.
Not with your pink hair.
I'm never going to sit in the front row at a comedy thing because I will get picked on.
Yes, you know The funny thing is, you go to, I mean, I do a lot of shows. The front row is always kind of the same. You know, there's like a group, and then there's like a date and some friends, and it's like different tables. There's always a date. And then you always ask one of them, like, have you been to a comedy show before? And they say yes. So that's always weird to me. I'm like, you know this is going to happen. Like, why would you
sit in the front?
In the front. But I do think it's kind of nice because whenever there's a couple in the front row, like, I'm always upping up the guy, you know what I mean? I'm trying to make him look good to help him on the date. And
you don't make him come on stage and tell a joke so that
I don't want him
to relive your
me.
Experience.
No. People hate that.
Are you still in contact with this person that all those years ago went with you to the comedy club?
Oh, the girl?
Yeah.
No. You know what's funny? I'm new on Instagram. Can I plug my Instagram?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Itay Bendom at Instagram. Yes. Itay. Thank you, people. That's very exciting. She found me on Instagram. Like, she added me shortly after I've joined. And she was like, hey, so good to see you on Instagram. I was like, oh, okay. And then she just, like, unfollowed me, like, a week later. I was like, oh, okay. Like, she's not in the country. I should say that. Like, she lives in Denmark. So she's not a Kiwi girl.
But she found you.
Yeah.
She liked, she followed you. She messaged you.
I know, it's crazy.
And then she went, your page is shit, and she defollowed you.
Yeah, when I hear you say that, it hurts.
But also, for her to come up the second he signed up, she'd been searching
she'd
for a
been
while.
She'd been stalking you.
Because the algorithm suddenly gone, oh, this is now the match you've been trying to find. So, you know.
Potentially she still has my number, because that's how you know, it suggests contacts.
Yeah, maybe you just needed to be on Instagram like a decade ago when it came out. Maybe you just sort of missed that. Are you on TikTok?
I got on TikTok 2 days ago.
Oh, really?
I'm hoping she finds me there.
Are you going to do little dances, or are you just going to stand there and tell jokes?
Yeah, I'm just using it to see what the kids are into. I mean, that sounded wrong. I'm just I'm just trying to repost my content on there. Yes, that's...
So, again, if you're on TikTok, you need an angle.
I know.
So, like, is it that you're... a comedian with a really cute dog, or, you know, are you a cat lover, or what else do they like on TikTok?
I don't know what they like on TikTok.
You could bake on TikTok.
Yes.
We can go back to baking.
The cookie baker.
You can go back to making cookies while you're telling jokes and then show us the outcome.
I kind of like that. I won't do it, but I like it.
All right, time for a music break, and then we're going to find out all about the tour and where you can catch Half-Baked Ideas. Te Matatini and Corella have released, with some support from LAB, a new song. It is called We Belong.
All our stories told and make us who we are. And it's a feeling running through you. Will you come and share with me?
Tini and Corella with LAB, We Belong. Videos are up on YouTube. Check them out. They're on all your usual spots. Great tracks.
So, Stephen, I've got to ask, do you say really loudly going live because I'm singing?
Before I hit the go live mic button.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually, yeah.
It's so rude.
I'm leaving.
Yeah, out the
sorry,
door.
You're part of, you're getting in between that.
This is a toxic work relationship, I'm sorry. I'm going to go talk about this in other radio stations.
Hey, once pushed Emma out of a roof, what do you call it, sunroof of a car.
Really?
Mid-show.
Well.
We used to.
They have lawyers for that.
We used to be husband and wife in a show.
Are you serious?
In a show, on stage.
On a show. What kind of show?
It was, we used to go into people's houses and do like, this is your life party. So we'd get hired to go in and do a party, but the start of the party was we would pull up in our car in the driveway, toot the horn loudly and everything, and then I'd get stuck in the car. We couldn't get out of the car. So
we'd have a big domestic.
We'd have a big domestic in the car, in the car, in the driveway. In the driveway. And then he would push me, he pushed me out the sunroof.
Yeah. Oh my God. Which went really well till one time one person took it a little bit too seriously and contacted the police.
No way.
And didn't realise we were the actors hired for the night.
Wow. Yeah.
That was entertaining.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But back to you.
So we're
about
comedians
us.
Ourselves, you see.
No, I like it.
In an old day.
I'm still in this concert for my show, I think. That's my new opener.
We can push you out of a car window anytime you like, because we're available for hire.
That's so I want to know, why are your ideas only half-baked?
Right. Well, it's to reflect the ticket prices. I'm keeping the shows on the lower end of the ticket prices because this is my first time gigging in the South Island. I mean, this is my first time going, for example, for like Nelson. I've never been to Nelson. And yeah, I just didn't really know what else to call the show. Also, I liked, the poster says half-baked ideas in, like, I guess, cookie font.
Mm. Back to these cookies.
Yeah.
You keep coming back to baking. Yeah. I think this is a sign.
Yeah. I'm trying to make
it
happen.
We're going to watch TikTok tomorrow. He's going to be baking.
I'm going to be getting tens of views. And, I just kind of like this font. I thought this would just be a funny thing to do.
I just noticed that I just noticed that.
Okay. I've spent hours on this, and you're saying I just noticed, and you had it in front of you the whole time.
You must have spent a lot of time, though, putting the sprinkles on the font because they're pretty, like they're not randomly laid out like you've dipped them.
Listen, it's I care, you know, unlike other comics, I really care.
So Canva cares too.
This is Photoshop.
It's Photoshop, it's not Canva.
Nah, Photoshop I pay for.
So back to the original question from 35 minutes ago.
Yes.
Half-baked ideas, why half-baked?
Oh, okay.
Because he's making cookies and they're not cooked yet.
I just thought it was a fun, I thought it was just kind of like a fun thing to say, just like a fun name. And when I was, because you have to pitch the show to all those festivals before you actually write the show, in a way. So I just didn't really know what the show was. And I thought half-baked ideas kind of gives it like, it's a vibe, you know what I mean? People love a vibe. And now the show is better formed. So like when I'm doing my show in the Comedy Festival, it's actually called Itai Phone Home. So that's kind of, it's a bit more conceptual, I think. But this is...
Do you write on stage in a basket?
No, but that's the poster is, you know, it's you got Elliot and he's got E.T. in the basket, and the poster is me as Elliot and me as E.T. It's
love it.
There's cool, that sounds
Photoshop's
quite fun.
Finest.
All right, we're running short of time, and I want to make sure we promote where you're heading.
Yes.
So this coming weekend, you are off to Nelson Fringe Festival to kick it off.
Yes, I'm performing at the Yaza Club, March 15, 8 p.m., I want to say, at 8 p.m.?
We'll go with 9, but that's all good.
You can show up.
I've got the piece of paper in front of me, not you.
You could show up at 8, you know what I mean? And I will be there doing my show, and I think about half the tickets are sold, which is very exciting.
Brilliant. Then where do you head?
Then I'm going March 21st, 8 p.m. Inch Bar, as part of the Dunedin Fringe Festival, and that show is almost sold out, so I'm actually
awesome,
very excited. And then March 28th, I will be at the Good Times Comedy Club in Christchurch at 6 p.m. doing my show, and I'll be there the whole weekend actually doing spots. So yeah, this is basically my run in March, doing all the Fringe festivals and just like getting the show ready for the Comedy Festival, which is coming in May 6th till 10th at Bats Theater in Wellington, and May 20th till 24th at the Classic Studio in Auckland. All details are available at Itai Bendom at Instagram. Damn, I should work for the radio.
You could fill in. We could have a weekend off.
We could.
I love it. What I would love...
I'll throw you out of a car any day.
Yeah. Come back after your tour and tell us how the jokes landed in the different cities.
Okay.
Because I'll be curious, since you interact with the audience,
yes,
what Nelson versus Dunedin versus Auckland.
Well, I'm sure I'll come back with some...
Just make sure you roll your R's in Dunedin.
Yes. No, I know exactly what you're saying. And I'm sure I'll come back with some fractured ribs after Christchurch. So this will be good. Let's lock it in right now. April, I will be back. And any listeners listening, email to the fax the show? What? How do you guys
email your questions?
What is your email address? Let's put your business out there.
Oh, we're at info@kickarts.org.nz.
Beautiful.
I feel like he should just play the music, get the next guest on, and I go make a cuppa.
Yeah, we could. We could go.
Itai, fabulous to have you here. We really appreciate it. We know it's a busy schedule, so thanks for stopping by and spending some time with us tonight. Go and check him out on Instagram, and we'll make sure it's all tagged up on Kickart sites as well, so we can find you.
And I'll put those dates and times on to our events page.
Excellent. Head to kickarts.org.nz. All the best for your tour.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Emma.
Lovely to have you here. Going to take a short music break, and then we've got author Patricia Donovan on the line to chat. Imposter Syndrome brought out a new track. It's called You I Saw. Imposter Syndrome, You I Saw. Very different music tonight from our earlier tracks, but so great to be playing fabulous Kiwi music. If you've got a track that you've just released, make sure you let us know, info@kickarts.org.nz, so we can give it a plug. What a lovely comedian. It just, I love that he was just him. I felt like we've met what Itai is like probably every single day. You know, where sometimes we get people come in here and they kind of put on the act. From the moment I met him at the front door, that was him. And I like that.
Well, a lot of stand-up comedians are like that though, right?
A little different to perhaps, say, comedy inside a big show or... Very cool. Well, for our last guest for the night tonight is to chat to the fabulous Patricia Donovan. Once again, she's written another book. This is Rita Vegas. Welcome back to Kick Arts, Patricia.
Thanks, Stephen and Emma. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's lovely to have you back. How have you been?
Pretty good. You know, chuffing away as we all do.
Excellent. And you've released another book, Rita Vegas.
Yes.
So tell us, what is this one all about?
Rita Vegas is my eponymous heroine and the narrator of the story. And she's volunteering in a rehab centre in Cambodia and is one of the first to come across a dead body. And seeing this dead body triggers in her memories of an earlier incident, an unexplained death, 5 years earlier in Wellington, where she got implicated in the crime and, to clear her name, had to chase after the villains and finds herself in a very sticky situation.
Mm.
And what was the inspiration behind this one?
Many, many years ago, I was working in Canberra. This novel is largely set in the public sector in Wellington.
Right.
That's where the main crime takes place. So many years ago, I was working in Canberra as a communications consultant. My biggest client was a government department. And one day, my contact in that department asked me to buy some airline tickets for him and his wife. I think they were going to go to Bali.
Mm-hmm.
And to tell me that I could recoup the expenditure by just inflating a few of my invoices to the department.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And so that's one of those little incidents that stay with you.
Yeah.
I had no inkling at the time it would one day inspire a novel, but that's a happy outcome for me to have the novel out of this incident. But yes, the word fraud, corruption, graft, grift, these words were not mentioned.
Wow. And you've written many books. Do you pull them all from sort of real-time moments in life that sort of kick it off?
Yes, usually it's come from my own experience. I tend to blend memory and imagination. There are some people who say that memory is actually a function of imagination. I think it was Julian Barnes who said that. And they are certainly connected for a writer. So I've always been to the places I'm writing about, and, you know, sometimes it's a place that triggers the story.
Mm. Well, how long has this one been sort of in the making, start to finish?
Quite a long time, actually, because I got COVID and then long COVID in the middle of writing it, which was very annoying. Usually I like to sort of just sit down and write the thing. But it's 12 months to 2 years most.
So for people that haven't maybe heard you in the past talking with us, tell us a little bit about your writing kind of day. Is it something, do you have a certain time of day that you prefer to write or a certain place that you like to write in?
I'm sitting there now in my office come writing room, and when I'm immersed in a novel, I'm hard at it, you know, 5 hours a day, 4 days a week. You know, I treat it like a job. I come into my office, turn on the computer and start work.
And I suppose you need to do that. I mean, I know as a contractor myself, if I don't actually have a routine or a schedule, it's very easy to kind of get stuck in social media or watching TV.
Very easy. Mm-hmm. Too easy. But as I absolutely love pushing words around on a page, it's not difficult.
Mm. And when were you first sort of inspired to write?
I've probably been writing all my life. You know, I was one of the kids in the school, at primary school, who was told to write a story and I would just keep writing. And my career has been in writing, in corporate communication, so I've been writing all the time. And when about 10 years ago I decided to retire early and start writing, I thought I would be an essayist. I didn't know I was going to be a novelist until I became one.
So an essayist because it would be shorter, or what was it about that appealed to you?
Writing about the real world, about what's going on in the world, my take on it, you know, and a good essay mixes the personal with the bigger picture, and that appealed to me. But as it's turned out, I'm a novelist. I've got much more power as a novelist because you can make stuff up.
Have you got, I mean, take this book aside for a second, because it wouldn't be fair to ask that with this one just coming out, but is there a book in your past that's either been the most successful or the one that you've loved the most for some reason?
I love them all. And they're very different, completely different genre, each one. I am particularly fond of The Collections because, you know, it's a cautionary tale and it sort of hits the zeitgeist, the problems we have with the planet. And I think I really, really enjoyed writing it. I wrote it during lockdown. It just spilled out. But then, you know, The Remarkable Mr. Digby is a very romantic story. I think that's probably my most successful book.
And who is inspiring you today? Like, if we came and stalked your bedside table, what books are on the side table?
You'd find a very eclectic mix. Weirdly enough, I'm currently rereading Kingsley Amis, and I don't know why, because he's now very, very dated. I have a book of Harry Rickett's poems, and there'll probably be a Patrick Modiano sitting there.
Ah, nice.
Oh, there was another one. Graham Greene's The Power and the Glory. I'm sort of roving through my bookcase, bringing out some oldies.
I love it. If you were to inspire a young writer listening who's, you know, thinking of venturing down this path, what bit of advice or inspiration would you give them?
Just sit down and start writing. And don't worry about what's coming out on the page. Just put it out there. You can't work with a blank page, so you've got to put some words down, and it doesn't matter if they're a load of rubbish.
And going back to Rita Vegas, who do you think this would appeal most to?
Anyone who likes a good story, a good yarn, and a bit of tension in the book. It is a crime story, and there is a chase, and Rita has a tough time. So, yeah, people who like a bit of a thriller.
Sounds like it would make a good TV script. Have you ever thought of turning any of your stories into television series? Or these? The big thing at the moment seems to be these limited series that come out, you know, for three to six episodes.
Mm. Funny you should ask, because all this began with a screenplay. Ah. The Remarkable Miss Digby actually began as a screenplay.
Right.
And it was picked up by a production company in Hollywood, but what with one thing and another. The Collections was picked up by a film company to turn into a television series, but they didn't find the money. So having begun as a screenwriter, it has influenced how I structure a novel. I found it extremely useful training for being a novelist.
I can imagine that. All right, where do people go to find out more about you, Patricia, or track down your latest books?
Well, they can find me on the web. I have a website, and that will have where to buy. But otherwise, you can go to BookHub. Do you know about BookHub?
Yeah. Fabulous.
It's fabulous, to find what you want in your local bookshop.
And your website is patriciadonovan.nz?
Yep, easy.
Amazing. Thank you for staying up to chat with us on a Sunday night. We always love catching up with our favourite authors, and we wish you every success with Rita Vegas. Out now, folks.
Thank you.
Go and support our wonderful Kiwi writers. And you're also from the Kapiti Coast. It's been a night of Kapiti Coast. Our last guest was from there as well. It's all happening down your way.
It's a very creative environment here.
Brilliant.
Lots of writers and artists.
Love it. Awesome. All the best, Rita. Oh, I need to call you Rita then. All the best, Patricia. Take care.
Thanks, Stephen.
All right. Cheers. See ya.
Bye.
Now, into our inbox, we've got the Auckland Theatre List. For anyone that doesn't know what that is, it's a weekly email that you can list your production on here in Tamaki Makaurau, and on a Sunday night it comes out. So it's letting us know, as we said earlier, Sixth the Musical as part of Auckland Arts Festival is here until the 23rd of March at the Civic. Stephen and I saw Murdered to Death, as we said earlier as well, at the Dolphin Theatre on until the 15th of March. A Mixtape for My Ladies, Auckland Arts Festival on at the ASB Waterfront Theatre. Now, I've heard some really amazing things about that, Stephen. Supposedly it's phenomenal by Ahi, and yeah, it's 17 nostalgic pop tracks to chart the deeply moving journey of this Sangeetha and her family in 1950s Sri Lanka. So it's meant to be amazing. Shark in a Boat by Jeff Allen has just finished its season at Pitt Street and is now moving to the Rose Centre, Belmont, the 11th to the 14th of March. So that's this week coming up. And Nicola Cheeseman is back. It's an encore season with Jodie Rimmer in that 11th to March to the 16th of March.
Ration the Queen's Veggies. We've just heard about all of that. And Hedy, the life and inventions of Hedy Lamarr, part of the Auckland Arts Festival. Oh, my goodness. So many things about. Oh, two more. Ngā Whakamaoritanga translations, part of the Auckland Arts Festival, 13th to 15th March. And Te Tupua, The Goblin by John Davies is on from the 15th to 27th of April. So do jump on to the Auckland Theatre list to find out more. And thanks, James, for sending it through.
Yeah, absolutely. And lots of good shows coming up as well. Do you know, one I've spotted on their list, which I'm looking forward to, Phoenix Theatre are putting on Cozzy, one of my favourite movies ever. Have you ever seen Cozzy, Emma?
I think I have.
The guy who graduates, it's got an amazing Australian cast when they were all young, graduates drama school and his first job is to direct Cozzy Van Tutte, the opera, in a mental asylum in Australia.
I think I did.
It's one of my favourite movies. Toni Collette when she was a teenager, and a star-studded cast. Now, if you've got something coming up, email us info@kickarts.org.nz. We'd love to schedule them. We've got a few slots coming up as these festivals start to calm down a little bit. Also, if you've got music or events, anything, flick it into us, info@kickarts.org.nz. Now, we've played a lot of Kiwi music tonight, but to close the show, I thought we'd do something a little bit different. Josh Groban is very popular out there. Beautiful, beautiful theatre performer too, Emma, isn't he? I don't know if you've ever seen him in any of your travels.
No, I haven't, but man, he can sing.
He's got a voice. Well, he's released a new album called Gems, and this is a track from it. It's called Be Alright. Have a fabulous week. If you catch Emma and I at any shows out and about, come and say hi. Make sure you have a great week and go and
kick some arts.
to sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, 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 blah. Let's go kick some arse.